Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Kasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big, get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Kasim. And Adam, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hi, my name is Adam Schutte. I'm an e-commerce entrepreneur. I'm based in Houston. Spent about 10 years post-college working in oil and gas. Started a e-com company on the side, mostly Amazon. The better my career did, the better the side business did, and they just kind of kept going together. Hit a point a couple of years ago in 2020 where it made sense to go out on our own, and been doing that ever since. We have two brands. We have it's kind of an odd one. We have a music festival accessories brand. So we sell a lot of hydration packs and fanny packs, and I sell a lot of glitter. And like, I don't even go to music festivals all that often, but we have that. And then we have a cleaning company that does like laundry detergent and other cleaning products and things like that. And that's doing pretty well too.
Awesome. So let's talk about like the brand for the music festival. So what exactly do you sell, and really just what gave you this idea to start that business?
So I started this early enough that the process is completely different than what people do now. There was this wave of people who got on Amazon back in like the 2015, 16, maybe even 17 time period. And there used to be these formulas you could use that was literally like, get on Amazon and, you know, you want a product that is $20 and simple to make and fits these checklist items. And then you could kind of do the math and see if it made sense. And I was part of that wave. And honestly, it was a bad choice. I would have so much more money had I done a protein powder, you know, but I did something hard and more esoteric. And so we're searching on there and I come across fanny packs. And this is back before that was really a popular fashion accessory. Like, they've come back now. When I did it, no one was still wearing them. And so they were in this weird niche where there were no fashion brands doing them. There was no Lululemon version. There was no Coach. There was nothing nice. And then there also weren't sports versions yet. There wasn't even a Nike one on there. So it was just all generic stuff. And that was the first product we did. And I was actually able to sell them more back in 2016 than I do now, unfortunately. And so we popped those things on there and they just worked immediately. I mean, like day one, I was like, oh, with this, that was easy. And so we doubled down and we doubled down and we doubled down. And when we figured out who was buying the most of them, we were like, oh, it's this music festival crowd. So we started making more of them that catered to that market. And then one thing led to another. And it's like, what else do these people buy? Well, let's do that. Let's do this. Let's do that. And the next thing you know, you have a brand that you just kind of kept adding things that the people were buying. And it wasn't really, that was not the intention. In fact, in my head, it was a travel brand when we started. I was like, oh, we'll do duffel bags and like luggagey stuff. And that was not at all what ended up being the main thing.
That's awesome. So I guess like for that brand, right, is it still mostly Amazon, or have you gone into more D2C retail? What does that look like?
So it's still mostly Amazon, unfortunately. This year is a big push to get much more off of Amazon. The problem is it's very hard to be good at both, because D2C and Amazon have very different pricing strategies. If you look at like what works in D2C, it is mostly things where the cart value is going to be at least $60, and really like 100 is probably the sweet spot. So somewhere in that range. The only exception to that is if you do a lot of stuff that's reorderable. So if you get people on subscriptions, it can be cheaper. But even then, you're thinking about the same number, which is like, what is my long-term value on that? And it typically needs to be at least $60 to $100, because capturing a customer on Facebook or those places is very expensive. Amazon's the exact opposite. Everything they do pushes you toward being a low cost option. So, you know, if you're selling, like I said, that fanny pack, when I did that in 2016, I could sell them for $15 to $18. Now they're about 12 to 14 because the marketplace slowly compresses everything down. It is impossible to run a Facebook ad that is profitable on a $14 fanny pack. Like, it just doesn't work. Right. And so we've kind of stopped and started multiple times trying to get that to work. And we have a little bit of a different strategy we're trying right now. But so mostly it's Amazon. We have our website. It does okay. We do some wholesale to kind of very boutique-y type stores that sell very like festival-oriented stuff. So it's mostly in Vegas and California. They have kind of what I would call like rave stores that buy from us. A little bit of eBay, a little bit of Etsy, a little bit of Walmart, but it's, mostly Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, that makes total sense because, with D2C exactly, it's like people want free shipping, it has to make sense. And it's like, you can't really make money offering free shipping on a product that's selling for 15 or 20 bucks. It's tricky. And to your point, right? If it's not a subscription or reorder type of product, people will just buy it one time and that's it. But if somebody can buy and they can, keep buying over and over again, well, then at that point, right, you might break even on acquiring that customer, but the LTV is much higher. So in terms of your other business, is it more of that type of brand with laundry products? Or I guess like what does that look like?
So that one is, again, it's in that same price range, unfortunately. I seem only good at finding things that are between like $15 and $40, but it's super subscription focused. And so it was actually Amazon first because that's what we're good at. So we go there first. But yeah, it is very, very subscription focused. Everything we do is about how do we get somebody on subscribe and save? And that because that just rolls,
Right.
the more of those you get, the more revenue you have that just doesn't require constant refreshing. And so our North Star is every week we post a chart of how many, what is our subscriber number done? And on average, we're picking up like 1 to 2% new total subscribers every week. And that's kind of my primary goal. And we are launching kind of just now off Amazon, trying to focus on the same thing, which is like get subscriptions, et cetera, with TikTok is actually our primary platform to start with, which is new. And that's worked shockingly well for somebody who's kind of failed at Facebook several times now with products. And
Right.
so our current main focus off Amazon is TikTok.
For sure. So I guess like in that space, obviously it's very competitive. So like how do you set yourself apart with your product? Like does it have like certain ingredients? Does it have like a certain audience demo? What does that look like?
So honestly, most things are not different, new, or interesting. Even if you look at really big D2C brands, like Liquid IV, there's 900 brands on Amazon that do the exact same stuff, like identically. Almost anything that pops off will have 100 knockoffs. And they might even have been there before. The D2C brand might not be the first one. They just might be the ones who did it the best. I mean, or what's that greens powder that everybody takes that can
AG1.
AG1, those guys don't sell on Amazon. There are 10,000 people identical to that. There's a company called Bloom. Bloom is basically the AG1 of Amazon. So in terms of what do you do, part of it is we try to be relatively early to spaces. So we were somewhat early into this space. And then Amazon is kind of its own game of very specific, it's very main image focused. What does that look like? Can you make your main image get a slightly better click through than the other guy's main image? And then once they're on your listing, how does that convert? So it's a lot of testing of conversion related images and like, is this work better than that? And it's a lot of playing with things like that. Price matters a ton on their platform more than most others. That's probably actually the biggest one. Like that's why Amazon price compresses because people just buy the cheap option. Branding does matter and it's hard, but a few people break out of branding, right? Like people talk about Simple Modern a lot, the cup brand. That's a generic Yeti. Like those guys are so impressive to me because when those guys launched, there were 10,000 other cup brands on there. A million. I mean, like, because that was this popular item for about a year. And for about a year, everybody on earth, including a bunch of Chinese manufacturers, launched cup brands. And for whatever reason, those guys were able to stick it out, grow, and then now they've actually built a real brand. But even those guys, primarily Amazon, because it's really hard to make their money off. But so in turn, back to your question, like, which is how do you differentiate? It's really hard because there's not a lot of ways to do it. So there's design patents. So in our festival brand, we actually have a few design patents on some of our hydration pack designs, have patents on them, and that's helped. There's refreshing styles. So we are able to refresh styles in the festival brand where we're trying to have some different version of things that nobody else is doing as quick as we are. With laundry, it's a lot of branding. It's a lot of just styling. It's trying to be very price competitive, which is not easy when you're the American seller versus the 20 generic Chinese ones. And then the real moat, the only real moat, which is the hardest one, is do people know your brand name? Right. So Simple Modern has built their moat by marketing, basically, even though it's the same thing. They sell a version of that bog bag. Like there's no moat to that. It's a pull bag. But people buy it because they like the brand name. I think they do backpacks now. Like that has nothing to do with their cups, but people like their brand. Or like Anker, who does the iPhone cables. You know, it's a nine-figure brand built on the most generic item humanly possible.
Right.
And then your final option, which I've never done and have no skill set to do, is utility patents.
Right.
A good example of that would be like the Ridge guys and their wallets. Like the
Right.
Ridge guys have gotten a utility patent on that wallet, which I don't fully understand how that's possible, but they do. And so they now basically own the Amazon market for that type of wallet.
Right.
And that's the best way to do it, probably, if you actually have a utility patent.
For sure. So I guess like early on, it's, obviously branding is part of it, but it's sort of like this race to the bottom in terms of price, getting people in the door. And then maybe eventually once they're subscribed or once they're in and you have good reviews, then you can raise your prices back up.
Sometimes that's the goal, right? The goal is to
Right.
establish market share and then do that. It takes time for kind of those markets to hit an equilibrium where people
Right.
sometimes are able to raise or lower their price.
Right.
And sometimes the market price ends up settling lower than where you want it, right? And a lot of
Right.
that is determined often by how many generic Chinese manufacturers decide to list directly. And when those
Right.
guys do that, they almost always will find an equilibrium price that's lower than where you want it to be.
Right.
But in an ideal world, yeah, you establish and then over time you're able to raise your price to something you are happier with.
For sure. So obviously now we're about halfway through 2024. So for this year to be successful for you, what are you really looking to accomplish this year?
Yeah, so our big goals are very much focused on the cleaning brand. And because right now that's basically a hero SKU. So it's one main product. There's a couple of others that are very small. It comes in a few different scents. But it's really one primary product. And now that that's pretty established and working really well, our primary focus is adding two to six products that are complementary to that. Each one of them kind of has specific revenue goals that we have in mind. But if they go the way we want, that kind of easily doubles the revenue of that company without adding any incremental revenue on the main product. Like it's just purely brand expansion. And by doing that, that puts us in a much better position going into 25 to potentially either be able to super scale it or even potentially sell it. And then I think we might lean toward selling it because we've been doing this for quite a while and we've not taken one off the table yet. And that one's probably in the better position for that to be an option. And the other reason that matters is because there's a lot of incentives to sell more than one product together, going back to your AOV thing. When I can sell two products on Amazon together, my fulfillment fees drop almost in half in terms of like how they charge you. So if you sell a $20 item in my size range, Amazon takes like $5 for fulfillment, give or take.
Right.
You sell two items, they might take more like seven. And so your incremental margin there gets dramatically better. And the same thing is true on Facebook ads or any other marketplace. And so right now we don't have any of those synergies of bundles. And so getting these new products hopefully brings their own revenue, plus brings a lot of opportunities for increased margin with the bundles.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, I mean, obviously, like the more volume you do, the more money you can make. So in terms of nowadays, right, many brands are using high-level technology like AI. So do you guys currently use AI? And if not, where do you think that it could actually add value?
Do we use AI? So, I mean, I use ChatGPT personally, and I use Midjourney personally for a lot of the little things that, I mean, I don't think they're particularly interesting. I just like, help me write some copy, help me do this, help me do that. None of it's particularly innovative, I don't think. It's just I'm using it as like a generic assistant to bounce ideas off of. We've used it to help us generate what we used to go to stock imagery websites for. We're kind of generating all of that on there now. I'm trying to think of what it's really helped us with. I mean, it helps sometimes with spreadsheets if I can't figure out how to do something, but I'm not really using it in ways that I think are like powerful yet.
Right. What about like customer service? I don't know if you can integrate that with Amazon or how that even works, if it's possible.
It's not easy that we would probably have to be using someone else's third-party tool
Right.
that would be doing that integration because you have to plug into their API and they're pretty touchy about how you do that. And so
Right.
most everything we do, we're doing through third-party tools. And the Amazon ecosystem, at least, is super well developed at this point. So
Right.
like there's a lot of great software out there. We have our own software stack. I'm sure some of that software stack is using AI to do different
Right.
things. So yeah, we probably would like build our own chatbot. But for the most part, we don't have, I mean, I bet in a given day we get 5 to 20 customer service questions. It gets relatively low. And I have a team, I have a fully built out remote team in the Philippines.
Okay.
And so we have customer service there, and that's just one, that's maybe an hour of that person's day.
Right.
So in the scheme of things, that's costing me $10 to $20 a day in customer service. Like, is that worth building out a chatbot? Not really.
Right. Yeah. And I think also it's like probably some of the questions are very similar.
Yeah. We have basically a playbook that if you were going to build a chatbot, you would just, it would basically be we have a Google Doc basically that's pre-written, and you would just write in and say, answer with these. But yeah, I haven't found the killer use case yet. I use it personally a decent amount, but I've not found like the killer business use case. Do you guys use it for anything?
I mean, we're building some chatbots, so I think it's like an interesting space. And I'm always curious about that. We're more focused on Shopify. But yeah, I mean, I always use it for like ideation. If I have like, I'm like, oh, like how do I, like what should I post, like content, like different ideas. Like I would never
it for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I would never have it write the things for me. But if I'm like, okay, like struggling with like, what should I talk about today? It'll give me some ideas.
I'll have it write a lot of headlines. I'm like, hey, get, you know, I have a brand, I have a cleaning brand that does blah, 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 blah. And then I'm like, give me 50 taglines.
Right.
And then I'll just pick through the taglines till I find something I like. And sometimes I use it exactly the way it gave it to me. Sometimes it gives me my own ideas. I've used it to help try to come up with brand names before, where I took like every competitor brand name and I was like, use these words to generate me ideas of brand names. I've used it for that. I don't have a great AI answer. I'm hoping stuff like that comes along. I think people are just plugging it into existing software more than anything.
Yeah, for sure. It gets interesting. I mean, even now, like it's very high level, but it's still early in some respects. And it's important to your point, if you are going to use it for customer service or something like that, like it needs to be accurate and high level. You know, many of the old AI chats that have some AI component are not super high level, and it just pisses people off. And it's not what you want to be.
Yeah, nobody wants to get the double chat, the chatbot to get to the person because the chatbot can.
Exactly.
If I had a highly technical product, I could imagine doing that. If people were constantly sending you chats being like, hey, I can't figure out how to make X connect to Y and do this other thing. I can imagine it's probably a lot more chatbot oriented than. You know, usually people are just complaining at me. So it's like give them a refund or send them a new item or handle
it. And if they're complaining, but I don't want to talk to AI.
Yeah, that's probably 80% of them are refunds, returns, or replacements, you know.
Fair enough. So
where's my order?
You know, right. So what would you say is like the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started both of your businesses?
Oh, man. Honestly, I wish somebody had given me a lot different advice on what my first product should have been so I could have made a lot more money. But that's probably not the right answer. That's like buy Google, you know?
Right.
I don't think most... So there's a big disagreement in terms of do you go all in or do you do the thing on the side? I am personally a huge believer in do the thing on the side. And if you're having to ask people like, should I start the thing? You're probably not the right person to start the thing. And so a lot of people who ask me like, should I start this? Should I start that? My answer is usually just like, if you're asking me, the answer is probably no. And I don't know, a lot of my advice, I guess, is actually kind of discouraging to people. So it's like, if you don't know you want to do the thing, you probably shouldn't be doing the thing. Or do it on the side. And if you actually really end up doing it and liking it and it succeeding on the side, then that gives you the feedback you want to get.
Right.
But don't go shoot your shot. And you're not even sure. Yeah, you're not even sure you want to go try it. I think a lot less people are entrepreneurs than think they are.
Right, exactly.
It's kind of like when you watch sports at home and you're like, I could do that. No, you probably couldn't. Or you could, but you wouldn't do it near as well.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it takes a certain level of, you know, hustle and, you know, being risk averse and really putting in the time. Because to your point, it's like people either jump in too quickly or they, you know, just do something kind of half-assed and they never go through with it. So it's really just figuring out like what works for you and putting in that time and iterating constantly. Because
maybe the other biggest mistake I see people make is how you choose your partners. I'm in a few groups, peer groups, where I've been kind of running into the same people for years and years now. And the percentage of them that are either currently unhappy with their partner or have sold a business in part to be able for the partners to go their separate ways is shockingly high. Like it's got to be higher than the divorce rate. I mean, you need to treat picking your partners like a marriage.
For sure.
And I think very few people do that when they start That's actually my number one piece of advice. Start thinking about it like it's a marriage, because it's not just do you want to build a business together? It's do you have the same goal 1, 5, and 10 years from now? Do you want to build a big business, or do you want a lifestyle thing that lets you surf all day? Do you like a structured 8 to 5, or do you want to be able to work in like weird hours and et cetera? Are you a on the phone or in person, or do you mainly like email or chat? Like all these little things that don't make you a good or bad person can really destroy, you know, do you want to work 80 hours a week for the next year, or is it like not your pace at all? Like
Exactly. Yeah. Cause people think that they want to do it, but they don't really understand what it takes or what kind of hustle and, you know, dedication that it takes to start a business, because it's a lot.
It's a vision that has to be in sync. It's a personality type that has to be in sync. It's a work style. It's a communication style. And I think most people, they just have a buddy. I'm like, hey, we should do this thing together.
Right, exactly. But
your buddy's probably not the right choice.
I mean, sometimes it works out. Like, I know, like with Dude Wipes, it worked out for them. But yeah, oftentimes it's not the case.
It probably works like, I don't know, a one third to half the time, just like the divorce. You know,
exactly.
But it's shocking to me how many people will quietly tell you they're really not happy with the partnership situation, or they literally sold the company to get out of it.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's probably my number one piece of advice. Pick your partners carefully.
Awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or social media? I guess best ways to get in contact.
Yeah, I'm easy to find on Twitter. It's just my name, Adam Schudy. My last name is Chudy. Yeah, that's the easiest place to find me.
Awesome. Well,
I respond to most DMs if they're not a bot trying to sell me something.
Awesome. Well, Adam, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. All right. Bye.